Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Today, this session is being taped. If you choose to participate in any discussion in this session, you must sign this form up front for granting Compulsive Eaters Anonymous how specific rights in taping your voice before you share into the microphone. I have been in the program since 2003 and have a continued abstinence since 2003 and attend meetings in the LA area. Our workshop is on the gifts of abstinence and chronic and catastrophic illness and disability. And I'll start out by letting you know that I have a catastrophic illness. Since 1985, I was diagnosed with HIV. And I was 28 years old, and that just rained on my parade. It's a very dramatic thing to get when you're a young man. And of course, you want to do what all young men, young people do at 28. You think the world's ending and you just want to escape. Well, I escaped the only way I knew how at that time, which was using a different substance, and that led me to my first 12-step program in 1986. And what I learned in that first 12-step program was to learn a day, to live a day at a time. And that was what got me an introduction to God, because in that first 12-step program, I learned about God, living a day at a time, because in 1986 and 1985, the only thing they could tell you about HIV was, you can be dead tomorrow, period. There was no medication. There was no doctor visits. There was no prolonging your life. You got sick, you died, period. And everybody around me was getting sick and dying. So all I had was living one day at a time and working the 12 steps of the program. Well, eventually in 1990, they finally got medication. You finally were able to see a doctor. And, you know, my sponsor in that other 12-step program, when everyone was saying the medication was poison, told me one important thing. He said, what you do is, I don't care if people tell you that this is poison or not. You do what the doctor tells you and you take your medication. And so I got sick taking the medication, but eventually I got used to it and I did what the doctor told me. On down the road, I developed this like fatalistic attitude towards food. I always had a problem with food. I wasn't getting enough of it. I was a very skinny young man, and I was skinny then. I didn't bring any pictures. I didn't think it was necessary for this. But I was very thin, and I had this attitude that now that I'm going to die maybe tomorrow, I should approach food this way. Each meal is my last one. So I ate as if each meal was my last meal. And with the medication, I didn't know that what was happening, and nor did the doctors know, that it induced something called lipodystrophy. It took years for it to happen, but what happened was, over the years, it caused all the fat in my body to redistribute itself. It took time, but once it started happening, my fat cells started shifting. The fat started shifting to the front of my body. It started shifting to my neck, to the back of my neck and my upper back, and to my cheeks. And suddenly, I was this deformed, pear-shaped wonder with these spindly legs, because it also causes wasting. It took a number of years, but then suddenly I was close to 200 pounds. I went from 125 to like 200 pounds. And, you know, the doctors were telling me, there's absolutely nothing you can do about this. You know, and I lived like this for like 8 years. And, you know, I had to come to this acceptance. And, you know, it was another spiritual milestone because I had been a very vain young man. I used to model when I was younger. I was a dancer and a model. And I played around the Hollywood fringes. And because I played around the Hollywood fringes, you know, it's all about your looks. And when you suddenly look like a deformed freak, you know, it's not a very lovely thing. And you're hitting your vanity. And yet, you have this thing that you're still alive, all your friends have died, and you have a program, and the program tells you that you have to look for the great, to be grateful for what you have. And so I got on my knees and I found my gratitude. And I was grateful to God. I got on my knees and I said, God, if this is the price of continued life, thank you. Thank you for my body, for the way it is. I accept this and I'm so grateful that I have the gift of life that you have given me. If this is the way I'm to experience life and this is the price that I have to pay, thank you for the gift of life. And I had to come to total acceptance with that and be grateful for the gift of life. Now, I started getting rapid heartbeat. I started having, my heart murmur was really apparent. I've had a heart murmur most of my life. And, you know, they started sending me to a cardiologist. I started having, you know, like all these anxiety attacks. You know, I was clinically obese. And I started seeing an endocrinologist. My cholesterol and triglycerides were all off the chart. And this is all due to the HIV medication. And they started telling me because of the lipodystrophy, I could never lose the weight. And the only way I could get rid of the fat was to have it surgically removed. And when they said surgically, they mean by scraping it. You know, they could only go in with a knife and cut and scrape it out. And I was like appalled. I didn't want to do that. And some of the doctors, especially the heavier ones, said there was no way I could lose the weight. The endocrinologist finally looked at me because one more time on the various medications for blood pressure, I was on diabetes medication and rapid heartbeat medication. He said, if you don't do something drastic about your weight, your heart's going to explode. Well, thank God I had a friend who I watched him go through a dramatic weight loss. And the first thing I asked him is, are you okay? Because I'd never know if it's going to be an illness or not. And what he said to me is, he said, yes, I'm fine. I go, how did you do it? And he goes, how? And I go, huh? And he goes, how? You know, compulsive eaters, how? And I go, oh. And at first I'm skeptical and I didn't, you know, quite get it. But I had learned about how earlier on I had met a program who wasn't a program of it. I had met a man who wasn't a program of attraction for this program. And he was just a pompous asshole. And so I clued Howe out for a long time. Anyway, this guy was a friend of mine in the other program. And anyway, when the doctor told me I really had to do something, I called this friend up. And he invited me to a meeting. And I was very skeptical. I told him the other doctor said that I couldn't lose weight and that it was impossible. And he said, well, just try it. And so I came, and I got a food plan, and I started trying to do this. I wasn't successful at first. The first couple of days, I slipped after a day and a half, and I called him up and I surrendered because I had that moment of clarity. I took my pamphlet to my endocrinologist. He said, it looks really strict, but if you can do this, do it. Well, I just surrendered and tried it because I had no other option other than how. There was no option for me. The option was a knife. You know, that's not a really pleasant option. So what I did was I dug in and tried to do this. The first month, I lost 20 pounds, my first 30 days. And during that first 30 days, I was taking a very strong pain reliever. It was prescription strength Aleve, 800 milligram. I took two of them, one twice a day. And as I lost the weight, suddenly my body couldn't handle that strength anymore because I was losing weight and my kidneys shut down. So I suddenly had to run to the doctors. They had to flush me out and I could no longer take that. And that was my first experience. Then at the end of 30 days, I had to go to North Carolina on business for 6 weeks. And I lost another 20 pounds. And then I caught a cold. And that cold was a very severe cold. I got a bad sore throat. And that sore throat migrated over to my thyroid. And I developed thyroiditis, which is a rapid hyperthyroid. And in 2 days, I lost 21 pounds. And it was like a weird thing. And because I lost the 21 pounds in 2 days, I was really concerned. I called my doctor in LA and he said, well, the good news is this, you could have a heart attack, but you're already on rapid heartbeat medication, so you're fine. You know, and because I lost so much weight so fast, I called my sponsor and he said, we immediately got to get you on maintenance because you're already underweight. And here's a really strange thing. I lost 61 pounds in 2.5 months. And that's really a lot of weight to lose in 2.5 months. And suddenly, I found myself over a period of a couple months, we tried to gradually reintroduce food into my diet. And that was what was so funny, because it took me 5 years and eating like more than I ever ate when I was out there, it seemed like, to get up to my goal weight. And it was hysterical because I was eating abstinently 5 times a day trying to get up to my weight, more than I could possibly think I could eat. And now that I have almost 9 years, it's like I'm eating less than I ever ate before. And it's like I'm exercising. I walk Runyon Canyon 4 times a week. I go to the gym. I do yoga. And it's hysterical. And I eat less than I've ever ate. You know, welcome to maintenance. But, you know, those are the vagaries. One of the long-term side effects of the medications I'm finding out is about 5 years ago, you know, I told you I get panic attacks. Well, about 5 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, I was going through them. I have a boss who's like the jerk from hell, and he just like is a crazy maker. And I was having those panic attacks, and two or three of them were so bad, I went to the emergency room. I swore they were heart attacks. And it turns out that maybe one of them I didn't go to the emergency room was a heart attack. And I just found that out because January 25th, I had a stroke. So I got a complete workup. And it turns out heart attacks and strokes are a direct result of those life-saving medications that I'm taking for the HIV. You know, I have to tell you, if it wasn't for the 12 steps, if it wasn't for the fact that I'm in HOW, and that my diet and the food that I take and what we do in this program, you know, the stroke I had, if I was out there eating, could have been horrible. But the fact that I take care of myself, and I got on an aspirin regimen like way back when my weight was bad, you know, before I got into HOW, I got on the aspirin regimen because I had a concerned doctor. So I already got on the 81 milligrams. And then when I got onto HOW and my food got clean and my cholesterol went away for many years, the medication makes it rise again. I can't do anything about it. But my food is clean. And because my food is clean, because I take care of myself, because I exercise, because I do the things we do here, my stroke was pretty minimal. You know, I am affected by it, but the fact of the matter is I'm taken care of. I'm really taken care of. It was minimal because of what we do here. If that's not God working in my life, I don't know what is. If I can't tell you what this program has done for me, you know, I think I'm a living, walking miracle. You know, the fact that I'm 27 years HIV, and that has to do with the 12 steps, I have no other, you know, I can't tell you that that's a cure-all. It's not, because I know so many people, it hasn't, you know, taken along this far, but I know their lives were improved. I know that they had their own walk, that God talks to everybody in his own way. But I'm just convinced that it has added to my life and that it has carried me farther than I thought I could ever be carried. Because I was hopeless when I came here. I didn't think HOW would work for me. And it has definitely improved my life. And I know I have a few. I have 29 seconds. I could have gone five more minutes. But I just timed it for 15 just to have a place to go 5 more minutes. But I'm finished. Thank you so much for listening to me. And now I'm going to give it to Miss Woody.
Hi, I'm Woody. I'm a compulsive eater. When Carl called and asked me to participate in this panel, I believe it was his sense of humor. He asked me whether I qualified, and I laughed right out loud on the phone because I have 5 diagnostic labels which would qualify me for chronic and catastrophic and illnesses. And it seems like I started out with just one, rheumatoid arthritis, but it has had its effect on other systems and other parts of my body. And I have, as Carl mentioned, I too have learned that if the illness doesn't get you, the meds will. And then there's a med for the med. And I have to say that every day I'm so grateful to God for my abstinence because it gives me a perspective that allows me to not go underwater with depression or anxiety over the various things that happen. I wake up in the morning and I don't know how I'm going to feel. I don't even know if I'm going to be able to make it to the bathroom without spending a lot of time just moving my feet around to get the stiffness out. And a lot of the illnesses I have a recognized clinical component of either depression or anxiety. And the docs are very happy to right away, right off the bat, prescribe something for that too. And I say, no, you know, I want to see if I can handle this myself. I think I probably can through most of it. So I don't care to be altered in the sense, I'm a control queen. The problem with the meds is you give up control. I make a terrible drug addict because I can't give up control. And So I let those go, rarely am I dipping into, and I do mean rarely, do I dip into them. But in the beginning, one of the hardest things to deal with was depression. It was so, you know, prior to that, when I had illnesses that weren't chronic, like a bad case of the flu, I would go to bed at night and say, okay, God, in 3 or 4 days I'm going to feel better. And at about the fourth or fifth day, I'd say, okay, God, I'm going to feel better tomorrow. And I can't say that to myself now, and any night, because I never know what the next night morning is going to be like. And so that was really hard to sort of push through the depression about that. I was in program at the time. I had just started CHAL. I was living in Vegas, and I didn't know anybody. And I was homebound, and I had a sponsor for whom leaving phone messages didn't count. So I got to know the fellowship in Vegas rather quickly because, and I certainly learned everyone who was home during the day, because I got to make those phone calls until, and these are people I didn't know, and I'm making the phone calls. And here's a God story. One of the people that I was able to contact consistently, meeting every day, was a woman who was in a rehab hospital after spinal surgery for 6 weeks. And she ended up at a meeting 6 months later where she walked in for the first time again and thanked me for saving her program. Now, I was calling her every day because she was trapped. And she's the one who introduced me to so much of the basic philosophy of program. It's because of her I'm in these rooms today still, and she gets up and thanks me because she didn't have anyone else to take her mind off of what she was going through at the time. So that was a great gift. I don't know how many times a day I say the serenity prayer because of things I can't control. Even if the first 3 hours of the day were good, wham, something wham will kick in about 10:30, and oh, well, whatever plans I had, you know, I'm just not going to do unless it's going to a doctor's office. The traditions are all about surrender. Well, so is chronic illness. It's all about surrendering to what you're being given at the moment. One of the things I've had to surrender to, which has been very difficult for me, is weight fluctuation. And I see proof of it periodically that it's chemical, and therefore I would have no control over it. But when I'm in periods when my weight goes up, I keep telling myself, what am I doing wrong? I'm committing my food every day to my sponsor. That's what I'm eating. But I must be doing something wrong or this wouldn't be happening. And I start, like, beating myself up over it. And then a point will come when there's a shift in the meds. This has happened 3 times now, where I will, in 2 to 3 months, lose 30 to 40 pounds that I had gained, eating the same. And then I say, oh. It really was chemical. But it's very hard for me not to blame myself or beat myself up for that. I had a sponsor who said in the beginning, this is what I need to hold on to all the time. What you put in your mouth is your business, and what you weigh is God's business. When I was first coming into these rooms, you know, people with the first 30 days, you know how much weight a lot of people lose, especially if they're younger. I mean, 10 pounds, 15 pounds, da, 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 and it goes on like that for months. I was losing 2 pounds a month. And in my rheumatologist practice, when I went in the third month and had lost 6 pounds, the nurse said, she made a comment, she was going to have to call the scale company to have it readjusted because I had lost weight. I said, oh, no, I'm really working on this. And she said, well, you would be his only patient who has lost weight while on steroids. So, you know, at 2 pounds a month, that can take a while. And again, my weight is God's business. One of the things, a component that goes along with much of what I go through is I have severely restricted activity, and I'm completely immunosuppressed from the drugs, so I'm not supposed to be out of the house around groups of more than 7 people between October and May, because that's cold and flu season. When I get sick, I get sick. When I get sick, I stay sick. And when I get sick, I stay sick and get sicker. So I'm pretty good about following that direction now. But, I mean, what that means is I don't have my face-to-face meetings. I can't go to them anymore. and thank God for the phone bridge, because that's what I discovered. It's any time. Frequently due to pain issues, I'm up in the middle of the night, and there's my 3:30 a.m. meeting to go to. If I hit the 5 a.m. meeting, you know it's not been a good night for me. But it takes my mind off what's going on physically with me and gets me into program. One of the things I love to do is what I call bookending my days. Start first thing, and right before I go to bed at night, have another phone bridge meeting. And it just feels like it's not only a bookend at both ends of the day, it's God reaching out and embracing me around both ends of the day, and I really like that thought. One thing in the beginning, I have lots of conversations with God about this, and I do allow him to talk. But one of the things I've stopped doing, in the beginning I was saying, well, what next, God? Because I get the answer to that, and I don't care about that. It's something else that was found on another medical test, so I'm not asking the question anymore. But some strange things happen that you don't expect. The RA has caused half of my left vocal cord is atrophied, so my voice is going. You know, what? What's that about? Certainly nothing I knew about. Something wasn't anything that I had expected in any way, and now that's just one of the things that I get to deal with. But, you know, all of this is just going to make me, I'm sure, I'm not going to say, I will say a more... a more spiritual person. Also makes me very stubborn. I have never gotten into acceptance about to the extent that I just go home and fall on my bed and say, okay, God, I'm sick. And then that's it. I don't do anything more because I can't in my mind because I'm sick. I've never gone there. That to me is the wrong kind of acceptance. I want to do whatever I can. I'm constantly reading up on the subject, constantly discussing it between and among all my various stocks to see what their take is on everything. Because, you know, the system is one whole thing, and I think one thing affects the other. And I just have to keep in mind that, as with our eating disorder, there will be a solution for me, and I do know that. So I do what I can do in my good days, and, boy, some days I just really, really get a lot done, and I feel very good about that. With my restricted time, I can get in a lot of reading and writing, and do, thanks to the computer, I can do a lot of service. My brain still works. So I'm happy to be able to give that to the organization. Where are we at? Okay. My very first sponsoring program, my experience with her, that was a real eye-opener. I was in the rooms. I stood up as a food sponsor. I really didn't want to do it. I told my sponsor, I cannot sponsor somebody else because I haven't got this food plan down. I don't know how. I certainly wouldn't be able to do it. She says, well, either you do it or you have to find another sponsor because you have to start doing your share as soon as possible. So I said, okay, I'll do it. And I stood up and I said, okay, God, I know you're not going to give me anybody before I'm ready. And when the meeting was over, I got tapped on the shoulder, and I turned around. It was a gentleman, and he said, my wife would like to speak with you. And I looked, and I didn't see his wife, and that's because she was down below me seated in a wheelchair. And so I talked with her, and she asked me if I would be her sponsor, something I said in the room. Meant a lot to her, and what can she do to get started, and et cetera. So I got the book for her, and she called me the next day, and her husband had gone out and bought all the food that she needed to have. So as we were talking, I find out that she was a brittle diabetic, meaning not controlled, and as a result of diabetes through her system, she had had couple heart, open heart surgeries. She had lost a foot. She was about to lose the other foot and something else. And I panicked and I said, oh my gosh, I can't be responsible for somebody who's medically fragile like that. Oh my gosh, I can't, you know. And I had read, now I'm new in program, but I had read about medical abstinence And I thought, oh, that must mean there's a roster of people who are medically proficient in each room. So I called the entire phone list looking for nurses. And there were many. And they all explained to me, no, that's not how it works. It's not that medical people sponsor you if you have a medical condition. I thought, oh, my God, how can I do this? So I called around a lot of more experienced people because I was just really afraid of what the consequences might be, and you know, nobody could take her on. So I worked with her. And, of course, with the constant guidance of my sponsor. And it was my privilege to work with her for a year and a half before she died. And I went to her funeral, and her husband told me that when he wheeled her in there, the doctor had told him she had no more than 6 weeks to live. And she died abstinent for as much time as she spent in the hospital. She kept sending back the food that she knew our food plan wouldn't allow. She's very proud of that. And I'm very proud of how far she came into the program. And frankly, I'm proud of myself for lasting through that. But I think my one message to anyone who might hear this is, sponsors do not back off from or fade away from sponsoring somebody who has a medical condition that you're afraid of, or if you think you can't handle their food plan, because it's the medical professional who will take care of the medical side, including the food plan, and you, the sponsor, concentrates on the program side of things. I am now on a diabetes food plan, which was, so difficult for me to learn after being 10 years on our food plan. But I sent the food plan and the medical authorization to my sponsor the minute I got it. Now, she doesn't supervise how I eat. I call in when I eat, but she doesn't supervise it. Every now and then she goes, what? You can have that. And I say, yeah, and it's on page whatever if you want to take a look at it. And then sometimes I even report my blood sugars to her to prove she can't believe that some of the things I eat. And I'll say, you know, after 2 hours after that meal, my blood sugar was dot-dot, which is they love it. So it's working for me. But she doesn't supervise how I eat the same way we would do that. The advantage of this program on the diabetes food plan is I'm the only person that my particular diabetic counselor has on her client list who weighs and measures. So I don't have any problem with the food plan in terms of weighing and measuring, and she can't talk anybody else on her client list into doing this. And I said, no problem. And I've been doing it for 10 years. And she has actually set up support groups based on what I've told her about how we operate, the idea of peer support. And those people sitting around the table go, you do what? And I would be fumbling, I'm starving. I'm not going to fumble around for, a measurement cup. I said, you don't have to fumble around for it. Just leave it right there on the counter. I'm going to pull a scale down somewhere behind. I said, you pull it down the first time, and then you leave it right there on the counter. And so Carl says I'm done. But I do want to stress, please, people, when somebody asks you to sponsor and they have a medical condition and they're on a medically designed food plan, please do not back off from that. These people are desperate, desperate for the guidance you can give them in working this program. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Suzanne. I'm a grateful compulsive eater. And my story is a little different. I was born, first to qualify, I've been abstinent 9 years and 3 or 4 months. And I was born with a lot of birth defects, one of which was I had a cleft palate, which means I didn't have a roof of my mouth. And so to eat, I was already born with a defect. Literally, my mother had to breastfeed me, bottle feed me, and spoon feed me, and I still lost weight. They wanted me to weigh about 30 pounds before they repaired my cleft palate. And at age 3, I only weighed 19 pounds, and the doctor said, forget it, we're doing it anyway. It probably saved my life. And my mom did everything to try and get me to eat. And so that was not a problem. I became a compulsive eater when I was 12. My mother had been a compulsive eater. I can say that because she admitted it. Probably for a while, she was anorexic by circumstance. But what I remember is that she carried around in her purse something that was brown and had a lot of fat and sugar. The big size, I never saw her eat it, but in times of stress, I knew it was in her purse. So when my father died when I was 9, and I went to live with her mom and my mother, and it was very stressful, and I remember that was the first time I took my compulsive dive into the sugar bowl, literally. Took the spoon and the sugar bowl. But anyway, we went to live in Mexico, and which was good. I gained about 30 pounds. I was like 13. I lost it. I was eating a lot better. I was very active. And so during the time that I lived in Mexico, I lived there for 20 years. I had moments I was very healthy, but I also had periods of time that I was very ill. I would get the trifecta that I called it. I would get typhoid fever, a strep throat, and a staph infection all at the same time. And because of this, my body cannot take hardly any antibiotics. My body has been so bombarded with antibiotics, I have to be very careful. And because of that, some medications will give me a reaction, and I've had to have emergency cortisone shots. Not real helpful when you're a compulsive eater. So I have that. I was born with glaucoma. It had already damaged my right eye a lot. And my mom noticed it when I was born. The doctor was kind of like, oh, you know what? She has a cleft palate. You're looking for problems. But anyway, I sought help for that. My mom did. And I had 23 eye surgeries before the age of 4. And so, but when I went to Mexico, there was like nothing left for me. There was some drops, and if those stopped working, there was like nothing that was going to work. That was it at that time. So in 1990, I have to share part of this. I became abstinent in the sister program in Mexico in 08. In 08 in Mexico is a lot more like, say, how it is here. They had a mandatory food plan. And so I was abstinent, and I was at pretty near goal weight when I started losing what was left of my eyesight in my left eye. I have pretty good vision in my left eye. I lost the vision in my right eye when I was about 8. So I came up here for eye surgery, where I had all my other eye surgeries, because my mom had read about a new eye surgery for glaucoma. And I remember when they're going over the what could happen, the disclaimer I had to sign, the resident was read over very quickly, and you could lose your eyesight. And I went, whoa, wait, tell me about that one. He couldn't tell me. So the doctor said, you know, in all the surgeries, especially this one, you could die from anesthesia or you could lose your eyesight. I said, well, what are my chances? He said, I hate to do that. It's some vagueness, you know, give something. And he said it'd be like being hit by lightning. I'm like, okay. Well, I got hit by lightning. I lost my eyesight during the eye surgery. And I remember the night before, I was very uneasy. I was still abstinent, and I had a spiritual counselor in Mexico who was also my medical doctor, and I called him. He knew I worked a 12-step program and other things, and he said to me, you are a beloved child of God. And I said, I understand. He said, but you're also nobody special. What happens is up to God. It's God's will. If you don't have the surgery, you're going to go blind maybe tomorrow, maybe in a month, maybe 3 months. Because glaucoma is a progressive disease. And the type I had was very progressive. And I thought, God, I'm a progressive eater. I can't win, you know. I'm like, okay. But I had a calmness after that. And the next day, well, I had the surgery. I started bleeding during the surgery. And they said, well, that happens. Okay. So the day after, when they took the bandages off, I couldn't see anything except if you were, like, right in front of me, you know. And the poor doctor that did the surgery wasn't there, but the resident freaked out. And I felt so bad for him. But my mom, you know, my mom went into shock. Literally, she went into shock. She did not expect me to lose my eyesight that way. I have to fast forward. But anyway, My point is, I went through this, I was abstinent, and I was not angry at God. I was not resentful. I never asked, why me? I did ask, what is the purpose in this? So anyway, I lost my abstinence shortly after that because I had to lay face down into bed, keep my head down for 3 months. And then my mother had emergency surgery. So here I'm recovering. And then I had to have 2 other surgeries to kind of help repair the damage, but it didn't work. So I'm up here in Los Angeles, away from my program, away from my sponsor, away from my friends. My mother had emergency heart surgery. So I ended up caring for my mother, newly blind, and I really didn't have a chance to grieve. So for five years, I sponsored myself. And not very well. Well, actually, I got very close to goal weight. I did. And stayed that way for a while. But could not maintain it because I knew, left to my own devices, I will sabotage it. And I did. And I got 12-stepped in the CA How by my art teacher, who's still with us. And I went to my first meeting knowing I needed a sponsor, and I got one. She gave me a 12 and 12 in a big book in print. And what she would do is read some of the questions to me over the phone, or she would put it on a tape, and I was able to do the first 30-day questions with doing that. And my mother at the time, her health was so-so, so she would read to me out of the big book and the 12 and 12 when she could. And then my first sponsor decided to move on and do something else, and I was without a sponsor. And I was doing okay. I couldn't find a sponsor who really wanted to sponsor me because they didn't know how, they thought. And I was going to have this one lady sponsor me, but she wasn't available for a couple of months because she was really busy. And I said, okay, I can wait. But thank God, the people in my little meeting that I went to Thursday night, maintenance meeting, they had a maintenance speaker once a week, and they read the 12 steps and the tradition. I was given the suggestion firmly but lovingly, you need a sponsor. You cannot wait for her. I'm like, okay, I'm still abstinent. I get it. And I asked around who would be a good sponsor for me. 3 different people said so-and-so. And I thought, wow, that's different. That's really weird. They all said the same name. I called her, and she has been my sponsor ever since. And thank God, because as my mom's illness progressed, I had to have some flexibility in my life. And she was lovingly accepting me with all my baggage. And I would say I have missed a few days of phone calls. I'm not perfect. But I would say for the most part, I would get the phone call at 9:15 in the morning. But there were times I could not call her at 9:15. And she never said, you know, if you do that again, I'll fire you. Never. Because I would call her later. She knew that I was trying to take care of myself and my mother, and I really didn't have any help. So I had to be, when I started sponsoring, I had to be flexible too, because my sponsor was flexible. My first sponsee is still with me. She was here. She's here at the convention. My second sponsee was here. She's not here today. She was here yesterday. And I've had to sponsor differently because I can't read the material. I recently had two. I sponsor 8 people. I sponsor 7 women and 1 man. And when I do a third step ceremony, I have to have someone else facilitate it for me. I recently stepped up 2 sponsees on the foam bridge. And I had a third person read the ceremony for me. And a really great person. In this program, I have been able to get through a lot of things. And I've had my own illnesses up and down. I'm on a medical abstinence, and most of the people I sponsor are on a medical abstinence. My food plan is basically the Stay How food plan, but with a couple of differences. And I welcome sponsoring someone with a challenge, and a lot of my sponsees have challenges, too. And it's been a challenge. You know, I have to do my writing on a tape recorder, so I tape it. I don't write it. I don't read Braille because I have neuropathy in my hands. Not only do I have the glaucoma, but also I have scoliosis of the spine, rather severely. I was told I would never walk again past the age of 15, but I'm here today, you know, still walking, and I can even dance. So I have a lot of arthritis in my back and my neck. But because I eat the way I do, it's really helped my, and I have some heart defects from birth too. I really am healthy. It was said to me once by someone, and at the time I thought, that's kind of cruel, but there may have been some logic to it. You're not really going to get to your goal weight until your mom passes. And I've always shared, I didn't want my mom to have to die in order for me to live. And there were times I could not go to face-to-face meetings. You know, I couldn't. Thank God for the phone bridge. Really. There were times that I couldn't get to any face-to-face meetings, and I would do a half an hour of the phone bridge every day, or when I could. Snippets. I would do a whole meeting. I couldn't be of much service. But I did take a service position at my first meeting. I brought the Diet Soda Pop. But you know what got me there, kept me there? A couple of times I took the literature home if someone was on vacation. I wanted to be more of service, but I was afraid. And I really was afraid. So what I would do was I would say, I'm available for late night outreach calls because my mom's sleeping was not good. And after I went blind, I couldn't sleep very well. I mean, I would sleep maybe 2 hours at a time, which is not really great for my health. Probably another reason why I haven't lost all my weight, because as soon as I started sleeping better, I started losing weight again. So I was of service then. And as my mom progressively got worse, it was this program and the steps that kept me sane. I needed a lot of clarity to deal with her issues and, you know, deal with my own. And because of this program, I still had a life. It may not have been the life some people thought I should have. Some people told me, why don't you just put your mother in the nursing home and you live your life? But that was not my choice. She did go to a nursing home briefly, and I think that was God telling me, you know, you can live on your own. It also to show my mom, because my mom was really afraid of dying and leaving me an orphan. She really was. And at the time, I remember telling my sponsor, you know, this is God preparing me for when she passes, whether it's next month or in 10 years. Well, it was, you know, sooner than 10 years. My mom passed away 2 years ago. And I have to say, you know, I didn't have to go through that alone. I really didn't. My best friend in program was with me. I didn't ask her. She was just there. And it was really important for my mom to hear that I wasn't going to be alone. And my friend told her that before she passed. And I'm just happy that I can be there for her. You know, she's going through some stuff with her mom, too. She doesn't have to ask me either. I'm just there when she needs me. So after my mom passed away, it did free up a lot of my time. I've had, because of my cleft palate, I've had a lot of dental problems and needs. I was missing 14 adult teeth, and I've gone through, major surgeries since my mom passed away. And I recovered really well. I had a bone graft. You know, I had a bone taken from my hip, put them through up here, above my upper lip. And I remember the doctor telling me, he said, you know, A, you have really good genes. You healed really well. You retained like 90% of the bone, and most people lose at least a third or half the bone. 5 minutes? Okay. And I didn't. I kept like 90% of the bone. And the doctor said, it's also the way you eat what healed you so well. And I was on a very different medical abstinence, and I went to the hospital, and I'm lucky at UCLA, if you call ahead and say, I have medical needs, they will work with you. They will. And every time my mom was in the hospital, though she wasn't an active member of our fellowship, I would go and I would order abstinent food for her. You know, I toast-stepped a lot of nurses that way, too. They were, like, really interested. But I would do that because my mom wanted to eat most of the time abstinent, you know, in an abstinent manner. And so when I would go through my surgeries, it was a different type of medical abstinence, but it was abstinent. And I made it very clear. And only one time was there a mistake, and they caught it before, you know, because I'm blind. I can't see. they caught it before I even got to eat it. So it's worked out. I'd like to talk my last 5 minutes, service and how to work with others with disabilities. My very dear friend who passed away April 29th, Carol Suzanne, drafted me into service on a higher level. I would stay on the after meetings on the foam bridge to help newcomers, and she said to me once during a meeting, "Darlin, I want you to be an intergroup rep for this meeting." And I said, "Really? You think I can do it?" She said, "Oh, yeah. Darlin, you're it." And, you know, I made a few phone calls, and a few people were like, "How are you going to do that?" And I said, "You know what? I have a good memory. I'll do it somehow." And I don't have internet. The messages are sent to, the announcements are sent to another blind friend, and I hear it. I go to his condo, and I hear the announcements. That's how I do it. And I memorize them. It's not perfect. I lead 3 meetings. It's not perfect, but I get it done. You know, I've learned. I used to be a perfectionist. It's progress, not perfection. It has been at times a struggle to work the program. You know, I just got the Forever Abstinent booklet on CD last year to a very lovely person. It is my hope that that will be available for anybody who needs it soon. And also, at some point, it would be great if we had an accessibility committee, which I think we will, not just for blind people, but for people with wheelchairs. They need to know what meetings are accessible, and a lot of meetings aren't. So that was my great wish. The other thing is a lot of my sponsees have other challenges. And don't be afraid to work with others. You know, I have a very good friend who took me to a lot of meetings. She's unable to do that right now. You know, offer that person a ride. Also, you know, before you open your mouth and say, "Hey, I'll help you go shopping," make sure you know what your boundaries are. Make sure you know what you're capable and willing to do, because I had someone that said, "I'll take you grocery shopping," and then it became, "I'll get you 2 items." And it's like, oh, okay, because I was already, "I'm going to go shopping, I know what I need." And so if you're going to offer, be willing to follow up. Be willing to do what you offer. That's really helpful. I do like going shopping myself. I like picking up my own produce, believe it or not. I actually shop for another friend. Now, I go to the grocery store and I have to have help, but I pick up my own produce. If sometimes, you know, people need stuff to be read to, you know, I have people that will offer, "Would you like me to read the Kingdom of Belief book to you? Would you like me to help you with something?" And I'm like, yes. And I have to learn to ask for help. I really have. But I've also learned to accept help even when I haven't asked for it if I need it. And that's been hard. So if you know somebody that's struggling with any type of chronic illness or difficulty, you know, and if you are able to help them, because you are being of service, and this is, you know, service, one of our tools. And it is service to yourself. You never know when you may need that service yourself. You don't know. So please, if someone, you know, I had someone tell me, "You can get to the meetings yourself. I'm not going to offer you a ride." My home meeting is a very large meeting. And I sometimes prefer just going to Foam Bridge, because getting to that meeting sometimes is more stressful. I get there late. You know, sometimes I get there at 7 in the morning and starts at 8:30. So it's sometimes it's easier to just do that. But anyway, please work with others. Please love the others that are different. We all have our challenges. Some of us, our challenges are noticeable and can be seen visibly. Other challenges are inside and cannot be seen. So please do it with love. Don't be afraid. Ask, because a lot of people were afraid to sponsor me. Ask, how do I do this differently? What can I do? My sponsor was never afraid. She didn't hesitate. God bless her, and I love her so much. And I want to thank Carl for asking me to speak. Thank you, Woody, and I'd like to thank Sue, who put this all together. And just please be of service, and keep coming back, and do it with a lot of love. Thank you.
We are now going to open this up for questions, and we welcome anyone to come up.
Hi, so I'm Sheila. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Sheila.
And thank you very much for this panel. And Susie, thank you for changing my life. You are just a revelation in my life. I don't know that I know anybody more spiritual than you. I've told you that many times, but you just, I'm astounded by your humility and your courage and tenacity. You inspire me so much. And I thank you for my new friends who I got to hear on the panel today. Beautiful inspirations as well. Thank you. How do you think we can get this message out there? Because I have an MS diagnosis. I've had it for many years, and I use a medical abstinence as well. And I've had numerous instances, and one just about 2 weeks ago. Because I didn't know, I know Susie's my emeritus sponsor, but I didn't know if she had availability to be talking with me, so I was seeking out a sponsor, and this person wouldn't sponsor me because I use a medical abstinence, and I've got 8 years of abstinence. I mean, this thing has worked for me. How do you think we get the message out there that we have a responsibility to follow the dictates of our own seven tools, which says we'll accept a food plan from somebody? I mean, I always find it ludicrous when somebody won't. How do you think we can get that message out there?
I think the first way is this program being recorded and will be on the website for downloading. So, for example, for my town in Albuquerque, nobody comes here to the convention. They all download the convention recordings. And so that's one way this will be getting across. There was also a very effective workshop on the phone bridge regarding this very topic that was heard by hundreds of people, and that's one way. Another way might be if you would write in a suggestion to the World Service Office that the Education Committee of Conference consider this as a topic for a brochure so that the fellowship can be more broadly educated. If there's a brochure on the table and our sponsors are giving it to their sponsees, then this will affect, I believe, most of our message gets effectively conveyed through sponsorship. And if we can get this booklet out there where the sponsors can then hand it to their sponsees and practice what they preach, I'm hoping that this, you know, most prejudice, I think, is based on fear. I'm hoping that people's reluctance will be less if we can get the message communicated on a greater level. That's my thought.
I agree. It's really one of education. I run into a lot of prejudice when it comes to medical abstinence. I have a lot of people come to me for medical abstinence because I always qualify as having medical abstinence. So, you know, the reluctance I get is for people wanting to give me a valid reason for medical abstinence, because there's a lot of people who don't want to give me a doctor slip or show me why. And usually I'm okay with it until they, you know, want to get into basics. They want to be, what's the word, ephemeral in their qualification. And I'm usually pretty easy going on it until they start slipping around. And then when I ask them to come with me and bring me what their nutritionist or medical professional, and we go over it with the forever abstinence and see where we can get on track. And then when they, like, run away, then I know they're not quite serious. I don't know if that makes sense to you. That makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Then those are the ones I sort of wonder about. But I'm very clear because I've been, as I shared, I've been all over the medical abstinence. I've had to, like, do more than we're allowed, and then had to track back, and I've had to eat what we're, well, I've always tried to eat with my sponsor. My doctors have allowed me to eat. My doctors have always allowed me to eat the food on the program, but I've had to eat vast quantities, and now I'm eating less than I've ever ate before, but still within the realm of the program. We have to eat what our bodies tell us we need and what our doctors tell us we have to eat. We have to go by what the doctors say, and we have to educate everyone around us. In my groups in LA, they all know about me, and I broadcast it. And we're the ones who have to spread the message. It's up to us. You have that right. You're here in LA, right? Yeah, so in every one of your groups, you're the spokesperson.
Yeah, I'm on a medical abstinence, and most of my sponsees are too. But I also tell the sponsees who are not, don't be afraid. It's like, well, there were some people who were afraid to sponsor me. It's the unknown. You know, what do they know? They know the food plan. They don't know medical abstinence. And so it's the same thing. They didn't want to sponsor me because they were afraid, well, what am I going to be responsible for that's different? I don't know. And so don't be afraid to ask. When, I have had some of my sponsees actually send me copies, and I had someone read it to me. And I tell my sponsees who aren't, you know, go out there and it's okay. Be very clear, though. You know, because I have had, there are people that will kind of say, oh, I'm on medical abstinence and I don't have to do any fruit. This doesn't sound so right. I'm like, okay, send me their doctor's note. Well, it wasn't that. It was her husband didn't eat fruit, so she didn't want to eat fruit. And she was taking a certain drug that you have to be careful what type of fruit you eat. And she came clean. She said, and I said, okay, you know, your husband is your husband. This is your plan. This is your program. So, and it is. It is up to us to spread the word. Don't be afraid of medical abstinence. Ask questions. It is the fear of the unknown, and we only are comfortable with what we know. We have to get out of our comfort zone. We have to get out of the box sometimes and spread our wings and expand our horizons a little bit. So don't be afraid to ask, and don't be afraid to ask for your needs lovingly. You know, that's also another, you know, ask lovingly.
Another comment is, I've heard on the phone bridge someone who, when they ask for sponsors, available sponsors to speak up, someone has spoken up and says, I particularly take people who are on medical abstinence. And right away I wrote her phone number down. But since I've heard that when I do go to my face-to-face meetings, when I stand up and qualify and I said, I welcome people on a medical abstinence plan, if we ourselves can get that across, that's a different level of education. That's more of a welcoming, opening up your arms. Here I'm not afraid to do it. And, if you've got the space, please come to me. I think that one-to-one approach can be one of the most effective things we can do in our rooms.
I actually came to be educated, but I recognize after your shares that I also have been diagnosed manic depressive in the past and totally forgot about it because I got off the medication, and the food plan we have works for me with that. And I wondered if you had any suggestions or ideas, or maybe it's not even my business when somebody says that they have that sort of diagnosis, bipolar sort of thing, and they get in fear that this food plan won't help them, or they think that they have to stay on medication no matter what. You addressed it a little bit about symptoms of things so that you know. But I wonder if you had any.
Once again, I think that part of it comes down to the relationship between the person and the medical professional. We have a standard approach to many things in this program, and we say that issue is between you and your sponsor and your higher power. Well, with people with medical issues, I always throw the medical professional into that. It becomes a foursome, not a threesome. And it's not up to the sponsor to talk to a sponsee and recommend some change in the food plan based on their medical symptoms. It's really up to the sponsee to get to the doctor and then report back to the sponsor. I'm on this diabetic food plan, but I still try to eat to the extent possible within our food plan. because that's what I'm accustomed to, and that worked for me for many years. It stopped working for me with the diabetes. But again, so we've got this foursome as a partnership, myself, my sponsor, my higher power, and my medical professionals. We are not professional food people within our organization, and we would never make a recommendation regarding certain types of foods for certain types of medical conditions. Having said that, there's still a logical way of dealing with it. Technically, each medical condition is an outside issue to program, but we all need to work within the parameters of our membership and the realities of life. We can't just kick everybody out and say go to another program if you've got a medical condition. So we work with it by saying we will accept variations lovingly, and we will accept you as people with conditions lovingly, and we will work with you.
We are not doctors, and because of that, I really suggest that you take your food plan to your doctor as I did and ask him what he thinks. And that's really the best way to go. But as someone who came into the program and developed a psychosis, what I did is I asked questions of other people who were affected mentally as well. And they taught me to use the second step. And by use of the second step, and by working with somebody who was very involved with working with people with my sort of problem with psychosis. My psychosis was severe. I wanted to harm people. And she was able to help me destroy my old idea of God, create a kind and loving God, and to help me find a new relationship with God and my world around me. And I was able to work through that insanity that the second step talks about. You know, I discovered a whole new world. So working the second step and using your doctor to his best effect and the food program might be effective.
Yeah, I'm not that on that route, but some of my sponsees on our psychiatric medication, some are not. I have a new one that has asked me, should I get off my psychiatric medication? And I said, I'm not your doctor. But, you know, I say this. Once you start working a 12-step program honestly, vigorously, brutally honest, and the food plan, it has been my experience with some of my sponsees, they've been able to get off some of their medications under medical supervision. And their health is improved by getting off the medications. And so sometimes people will ask me, do you think I should get off my psych meds? I'm like, I don't make that decision. If you ever think that is your path, I send them to Narcotics Anonymous because they can help you do that, if that's what they decide. But I lovingly say, you know, do the program and then reevaluate where you are. If you're feeling different, tell your doctor so they may need to readjust your meds as you go along. You know, it changes. And that's what I tell them.
And there was one more thing I wanted to add. I really want to put in a plug, a two-pronged plug, regarding solicitation of writings for a meditation book. You know, we are a society of writers, like it or not. We are also a society of sponsors, and our sponsors here, the sponsee readings daily. And we all know as sponsors that periodically there are absolute mind-boggling things that come out of our sponsees. Sometimes they're total gems. Sometimes they are an insight. Sometimes it's wonderful humor, applicable to step work, that sort of thing. I say to my sponsors all the time, my sponsees, probably once a month to each of them, your service now is to send that in on the website to the World Service Office. I know you don't want to do it. I know you don't think you're that good a writer. I know you're going to be opposed for various reasons. Send it in anyway. And report back to me what date you sent it in so I know that you followed up on it. I'd like to add that everyone in the with a medical condition has insight to share. And whatever it is regarding a reading from the big book, from the step work that you're doing, from the writing that you're doing, send it in. 200 words max. But you have insights to share with other people in our entire community that they may not otherwise get. And this would be a gift that you're giving, a gift of the program. Thank you.
Young lady.
Is this working? There. I'm Shelley, compulsive eater. And I just want to thank you guys for having this panel. Wasn't quite sure why I was so drawn to this, except for the need to see how you cope and listening as a nurse. I realized as Susie or Suzanne who was sharing, I suddenly got a compulsion to eat. And it really struck me, where did that come from? And it was when you're talking about the residents and consent is the word, the consent. And I work in an emergency room where we have residents, and that's a big issue because the nurses often get handed over that. And have been looking recently because I've been, said this in the meetings this weekend, I've been slipping and sliding the past couple of years after some long-term abstinence. And it was also when I went back to work full-time, and I do really good at work because I have a pattern that I don't pick up. That's not my food at work. I bring my food. But when I get home, man, I didn't realize. I know that there's issues with nursing, and a lot of it is, if you really just brought up my need, that's where I need to go, is that work with what the patients and just grieving patients. And so to hear how you cope, and that it's worth it, gosh, was such a gift. Especially you, Carl, was a real gift. I work in a county hospital, and sometimes you just think, if I was in your shoes, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't go through what you're going through, and the struggle of helping somebody do that. And I just recently, this past year, looked at, I really want to share this, and I hope it's not unethical, but where I'm from, I looked at the Board of Nursing, and the cover of that magazine was a quarterly journal or something, and there were 5 women that were all leaders in nursing that were obese. And it just shocked me that if I don't take care of these emotions and learn how to deal with the grief, things, I'm going to die. Because I'm a 250-pound, that was my highest. And I really believe if I keep doing what I'm doing, seeing the progression of this disease, I'll be a lot bigger than 250 pounds if I don't die of something else first. I just want to really thank you and encourage you to keep talking about how you do it and to not give up, because what a gift this has been for me to hear you and know that it's worth it. So thanks.
Well, I've been in the hospital rooms of some of my friends dying of AIDS, and let me tell you, the nurses who jump right in there without any gloves as they're like in their last stages and try to help them and with no thought of anything but to help them in their last moments, not even protecting themselves. And I have to slap them away and tell them to go put on gloves, and don't worry about me because I already have it. To me, that sacrifice that they're willing to just jump in there And that's what you nurses do. So I know you guys sacrifice, so I understand. Thank you for your share.
The medical professionals are often willing to jump in there immediately. And that's the type of response I would encourage for everyone who's considering sponsorship of somebody with disabilities. Jump in there immediately, even if you don't have your gloves on. You will find them. Thank you.
As I said, and thank you for your service, too, because, my God, I've had some great nurses, and so did my mom, especially the last 3 weeks of her life. But as I said, I 12-stepped many nurses. I mean, one of them was about, she said she was close to 400 pounds, and her daughter was 300 pounds, was 19. And she overheard me talking to my mom. She asked me, did you go to the meeting? Yeah. And then I started ordering her food, and she knew my cardiologist, so she knows I'm really healthy, even though I'm still overweight. I'm very healthy. I just had a checkup with my cardiologist. He cannot be happier. And she told me, she said, she was crying later. She was on her break. She took me aside, and she said, where can I get help? And there are a lot of us here that need help. We eat our emotions. We see so much suffering and anger and illness. You know, a lot of us are in this boat. So I when I'm asked, I always 12-step. And, in fact, some of the nurses at my primary are overweight, very much overweight. And my doctor said, I want you to bring me some pamphlets because most of my nurses should be going to your program. And I said, well, she said, okay, I'm being very judgmental. It would be great if they'd go. And I said, yeah. And so a couple of them have. A couple of them are still doing research. But every time I go, I take some pamphlets. And she's told me, I wish half of my patients who are younger and at a supposedly a healthy weight were as healthy as you are. Because even though I have my medical issues, God, my higher power, and the 12 steps have given me my health, even though I still struggle in other areas of physical problems. But hats off. And I also toasted up one of the doctors, a surgeon. And every time I see him, he kisses me, and he's like, thank God, thank God. I'm like, yes, thank God for 12 steps and see how.
Okay, there was one more who had already signed. Another one? That was you? All right.
Hi, I'm Georgette, compulsive eater. I too have been afraid of what my responsibility would be to sponsor someone with medical problems, because I don't know, should I ask them what their food plan is? Should I have them send a paper from their doctor? Or should I just take their word for what they tell me their abstinence is? I have a sponsor who has one, and she's not sure either. And the girl commits like a whole cup of almonds and strange things, and she kind of questions that, and I don't know. You know, so I don't know what to tell her either. So maybe some of you could say, you know, what you ask them when they ask you to be their medical abstinence. I would love to sponsor someone. I'm just not sure what my responsibility is, you know. Thank you.
I sponsor four people, too, are on a medical abstinence. Neither of them are diabetic, so I'm not familiar with their food plan. I do have them send me their food plan and the medical professional's waiver for the food plan. And then after that, I don't get into it. If, for example, they're allowed to have a quarter cup of almonds and they're eating a cup, I don't. The most I'll say is that on your food plan? I don't get into it. That's between them and their higher power and their medical professional. Otherwise, I think if we took on more responsibility than that, if we got into the specifics of their food plan, we're not qualified. And it would get to the point where we would never take on someone with a medical abstinence if we felt that way, because that's too much responsibility.
I usually ask them, you know, so I kind of have some understanding, what is the medical issue? I do ask them, you know, tell them that we don't do sugar flour, because it has been my experience, some nutritionists will give them a food plan that really has a lot of junk on it. I mean, it is amazing. I had someone in my life who went to an outpatient program while working this program because she needed it, and the nutritionist gave her a food plan that I could not believe. I mean, it was really horrible, horrendous. And she did not use that food plan because she has her own medical abstinence that's, you know, that she does. So I say, you know, what's the condition? What are we working with? And just be mindful that this is not to play games, because we can play games, especially when we're new or returning, to be manipulative sometimes. That still does not stop me from sponsoring anybody, okay? I'm doing it with my eyes wide open, shall we say. And so that I know what I'm getting into. You know, why do you need a medical abstinence? And send me the plan, send me the permission from your doctor. And just be mindful of that. And I'm like, you know, make sure we don't eat junk food. That's, you know, so your nutritionist is saying you eat junk food. I need to kind of question that lovingly, firmly.
Last question.
I want to thank you all so much for the service that you give. You touched me so much. I kind of wandered into this room after wandering into all of the rooms. Not enough sleep, not enough coffee, and my indecision. Am I in the right room? And I currently, thank God, don't have any disabilities. And I think that the more you engage yourselves with the rest of the community, as you do, Suzanne, you know, I ran into you yesterday night, and I'm like, God, that woman has so much courage all by herself. Come out here, can't see a damn thing, getting your own meal, walking through this. I'm just like, God, how could I ever, ever not have enough courage to go anywhere? So thank you for coming into the community, because if you don't, if you only have workshops like this, then people think, oh, I don't have an illness. I don't have to go to that one, you know. And so many of you have touched me in so many ways, even when I don't think it has. You've led a seminar or something about spreading the message, and then today it just really just all came together. Somebody said something about spreading the message, and I left that seminar actually too, because I thought, I'm too young in this. I need to go to a different one. Young, I mean in program. But I went to a doctor for the first time. I mean, the first time I saw this doctor, because I needed a new doctor, and I was referred to her when both my parents were diagnosed with cancer at the same time. And I was very close to them. And I was handling everything like a pro. And I had two little kids and a work job. And I was like, I was just taking everybody everywhere, doing everything. And I went into that appointment, and the nurse said, I made the appointment for irritable bowel. But when I sat down, the nurse said, you know, they start taking your blood pressure and everything. What are we seeing you for today? I started bawling, crying. I couldn't speak. And I was handling everything up till then, you know. And I said, irritable bowel. Because I didn't want to say depression and anxiety, because I'm going freaking nuts and it's too much at once. And I'm planning my son's bar mitzvah, which is supposed to be all joyous, and my parents want me to continue. And then in that same year, later on, my son had an epileptic seizure. And so I was like that trifecta, Suzanne. But I want to say that I did get on antidepressants at that time. That doctor helped me so, so, so much. He was so sweet. And then here's the killer for the nurse here. Please do take care of yourself, you in the health profession, because that woman later, that doctor who I love so much,
who helped me so much that day, on the very first day I walked in, crying like a weirdo, explained to me what depression was and why the pills would help me. She killed herself 5-6 years later. I cannot tell you how I felt when I found that out. However, okay, so it's been 6-7 years. My parents have passed. I've grieved. I've gotten over things. I gained weight. I lost weight. But what I want to say now is that thanks again. Somebody else shared about getting off the pills because I've gone to therapy. But more importantly, I've come to this program. And it's the first time ever in my life that I finally feel like I may have the tools. I just may. And I finally got the strength. And today was my very first day that I took a slightly smaller dosage because I went to my doctor. And I said, I think I can try to get off. I'm just going to try. But I'm sorry if I went too long. There's so many people that I have to thank for that today and this program. Thank you.
I'm sorry, but that's all the time we have. And in closing, I'd like us all to do the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Keep coming back. It works if you work it. Thank you, everybody.